Good afternoon. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. As the most senior member of the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities, I'm acting as convener for this inaugural meeting. I'd like to start with introductions. I have done that already. We'll start on, as always, my left, Senator Champion.
Senator Bobby Joe Champion, I represent Legislative District 59, which is actually where the stadium is.
Representative Kim Norton, I represent half of Rochester.
I State Rep Paul Anderson, the area between roughly St. Cloud and Alexandria is my district.
I'm Joe Atkins from Invercargill Heights.
I'm Senator Kathy Sharon from the Mankato-St. Peter area, home of the Minnesota Vikings training camp.
Representative Jim Dabney, South Minneapolis.
And Julie Rosen, chief author, Senate author.
Roger Reinert, Senate Duluth, future home of the training camp. No.
let the games begin.
I actually wrote the language that created the commission. So.
Jeremy Miller, represent Houston, Winona, and Fillmore counties in the Minnesota Senate.
Karen Housley, Senate District 39, representing Forest Lake and Stillwater.
Joe Hoppe, the representative from Chaska, Chanhassen, and Victoria.
Representative Tim Kelly, representing 21A, which is Red Wing down to Wabasha.
Thank you, members. The agenda for today, after the introductions, is the election of officers, then an update from the Sports Authority. I see Ms. Kelm-Helgen is present, and any other items as determined by the chair. So the first order of business would be electing a chair or co-chairs for the Legislative Commission. I think the best way to proceed at this time, after having consulted with nonpartisan research staff previously today, is to take nominations. Members are allowed to nominate themselves or others. The nominations will be individual. Senator Reiner.
Representative Dabney, before we do that, I would like to propose to the commission, we don't have specific language in the bill that calls for how we structure this, but I would propose to the commission that we do a co-chair arrangement, and I wonder if maybe we should get some adoption of that language, and if that's the direction the commission wants to go in, then we'll have further direction about nominations.
Senator Reinert, the legislation uses, and I'm looking to staff here, the singular chair.
It does.
But it the legislation is, or the statute, pardon, is advisory upon this body.
Correct.
So we do have the flexibility to do co-chairs. I don't know that we need any particular language to be adopted unless it's the will of the body. Otherwise, we can simply proceed with whatever the body so chooses.
I think that's correct, Representative.
All right. Yeah. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I would concur with Representative Reinert, but if we're going to do co-chairs, I would suggest that we would choose an individual from each body. Would make sense. Thank you.
All right. Other discussion on chair versus co-chair?
Mr. Speaker, I've just come from the floor.
I think Representative Thiessen is pretty clear on who that is.
Yes, he is.
Representative Atkins.
I think I'd concur with Representative Kelly. Well, I think it'd be nice to have two co-chairs from the House, but I suspect that the Senate will likely want to have a co-chair as well. It's important. My sense is that there will come recommendations out of this group to each of the two bodies, and for those recommendations to have the most amount of credibility, it's important to have a co-chair from each of the two bodies. But I do support the co-chair concept.
My instinct is traditionally around here when both bodies are represented on a task force or whatever, that the co-chairs, it's often done as co-chairs, one from each body. So I think that would fit in with how things are often done.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
But that is not, it does not have to be that way. And
that's
I think having one from each party is very important. A Democrat and Republican, probably more so than from each body.
All right. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I guess my suggestion would be the commission to consider my suggestion of co-chairs, and I think we could work out the desire for both parties, the desire for both houses through a nomination process, which we're going to have to go through anyway.
All right. So, Senator Sharon.
I'm just reviewing here the legislation. I want to make certain I understand that it sounds that the chair, if we're talking about co-chairs or chair, serve on a two-year term, expiring in the odd number year after a successor is elected. So can I assume from that, do others read that, that a term is only 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And not to be extended past the 2 years? So you could move it between the houses every 2 year period instead of having, you could have the House do it the first two or the Senate do it the first two and then the back and forth. That'd be another way in which you could move the leadership between the houses, not through the co-chairs, but also by every other election.
My review of this language, you're correct that in your reading that the chair serves for a two-year term. I don't see a prohibition on a chair being reelected. So you could have someone elected as a chair or co-chair, and then when this body reconvenes in 2015, that individual or those individuals could be reelected by the newly configured, sports legislative commission on Minnesota sports facilities.
May I?
Certainly, Senator Sharon. Excuse me.
Suppose we can make modifications to this request. But the last sentence under chair reads, the chair must alternate biannually between the Senate and the House of Representatives. So that suggests to me that it cannot be a reelection of the same chair every 2 years.
Senator Sharon, in consulting with nonpartisan staff today, if we were to go to a scenario of co-chairs, one elected from each body, we satisfy the requirements of that last sentence in subdivision 4. the way I put it, we kind of supercharge it, because rather than alternating the chair every 2 years or every year, biannually every 2 years, we would be alternating it presumably each meeting. And so we more than satisfy the requirements of that last sentence.
But if we chose to have both chair and co-chair from the House, then in 2 years we could shift it to both chairs in the Senate. Right?
I believe that's correct, or we could shift it to a chair and co-chair from each body, assuming that we have wide latitude.
Yeah. So my only point is that I think there's a lot of flexibility here, and I don't think we need to be tied into any particular organizational structure. I think we ought to choose our leadership on the basis of our confidence that we'll move the agenda and the responsibilities that are listed, the powers and the duties, and the budget oversight forward.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sharon, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's probably more important that we work in a bipartisan manner and that this commission is set up, six Republicans, six Democrats, and that we continue to work on a bipartisan agenda to make sure that we get these issues right.
Senator Reiner.
Representative Downey, I'll move that the commission adopt a co-chair structure.
All right. There's a motion. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Reinert motion for a co-chair structure for the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Reiner, clarifying that. At this point, then, I think I would open the floor for nominations. I think nominations should be done individually. Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, going back to Representative Kelly's suggestion earlier, I do think that we would like to have House representation on the commission, or for the leadership, one of the co-chairs at least. And I'm sure that my colleagues in the Senate would feel the same way. And I know we want, as Senator Rosen said, we want to make sure this is bipartisan. I think it is bipartisan, and it's going to be going forward. So I think it would be more important at this point to make sure we have somebody representing both the House and the Senate, so we can go back and make all of our members and individual bodies feel good.
So, Representative Hoppe, can you put? Are you wishing to put that in the form of a motion?
If that's the way we should do this, Mr. Chair, yes, I would move that we, the co-chair structure having been adopted, that we pick one chair from each body.
All right. Thank you very much. There's a motion before the commission. Trying to get my language proper and correct here. Is there a discussion to the Hoppe motion? Senator Reiner.
Representative, I just have a question for the author. Do you care to address the party issue?
Well, Mr. Chair and
Representative
Reiner,
yes, Representative Hoppe.
I think the party issue kind of, it's already taking care of itself. I mean, we're here on a bipartisan basis. There's an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, and I'm not as concerned about partisanship on this commission. I think it's going to work out fine. We all want, you know, the same thing. We might have slightly different variations on how to get there, but.
Senator, Representative Kelly, did you want
to? Yes, Mr. Chair, and I think it just goes to how we do things around here procedurally. I mean, we go to conference committee because we can pass a bill from the House, we pass a bill from the Senate. We come together in a conference committee where it's co-chaired, and we pass through legislation. I think this is certainly how we should go forward.
Thank you. Other discussion? Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm of the opinion that if we have two individuals from the House or two individuals from the Senate, I think the will of the body should be that goes forward. But I think that it's most important from my vantage point that we have a representative from both parties, because as you begin to think through some of these critical issues, I think that you want the diversity of thought and consideration. And that's not to suggest that there won't be open and transparent dialogue here amongst the commission, but I do think that there's something to be said, even to the public, symbolically, for us to have not just someone from the House and someone from the Senate, but perhaps someone from, a representative from both parties. And so I believe that to be very important.
Thank you.
And I hope the commission agrees.
Other comment on the Hoppe motion? Representative Hoppe, can you restate your motion, please?
I would move that since we've decided to adopt co-chairs, that we make sure that we have one chair from the House and one chair from the Senate.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Rosen.
Request a roll call.
All right. Roll call having been requested.
I'll take the roll.
I can do it, too.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm Sally Olson with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Excellent, Sally. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for the assistance.
Sure, and I don't have a very formal sheet, but so on the Hoppe, Senator Champion?
No.
Senator Housley?
No.
Senator Miller?
No.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Reinhart?
No.
Senator Sharon?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Adkins?
Aye.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Kelly?
Aye.
Representative Norton?
Aye.
Seven, no.
All right. With that, the motion does not prevail.
I knew I should have kept track.
There you go. All right. Any other matters before we move to nominations? Seeing none, I will now accept nominations. Members may nominate themselves. They may nominate other members of the commission as they so choose. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to nominate Senator Bobby Joe Champion.
All right. Senator Champion's name has been nominated. Senator Reiner.
I saw Senator Sharon's hand, but...
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Sharon.
I was going to nominate Bobby Joe Champion.
Okay. Senator Reiner.
I would nominate Senator Julie Rosen.
All right. Representative Hoppe.
I would nominate Representative Adkins.
All right. I don't know about the GOP members in the room, but the DFL caucus tape in my head is saying, any further nominations? Any further nominations? Any further nominations? Hearing none, nominations are now closed. We have three names that have been nominated: Senator Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Julie Rosen, and Representative Joe Atkins. Each of these would require a minimum of 7 votes, a majority of the body, to be elected as co-chair.
And so we vote, Mr.
Senator Champion.
For clarity, so then we vote for 2, since we're doing co-chairs, or yeah, that's my understanding, we would vote for 2.
That would be correct.
List. Okay.
That would be correct. I will suggest that I ask for the vote in alphabetical order, which would put Representative Atkins first, Senator Champion second, and Senator Rosen last of the 3.
Let me just think about that.
Okay. I was doing alphabetical by last name. Senator Sharon?
Well, I just want to reflect on that. I wonder. I wonder if you might not take them in the order in which they were nominated.
Senator Reiner,
Representative Dabney, it strikes me that we have, you know, the most similar situation is regent voting.
Yeah.
And I would think we'd just go around the commission and we would each offer up to 2 names.
Yes.
Since we have the 2 co-chairs positions, and then ask our already proven capable staff to.
Who's trying to think how to do it?
Note the votes cast as each member offers up to 2 names.
The chair's intent is that we vote individually. So we would take a first swipe through, see if the first name reached the 7 vote threshold, go through a second time. If it, I assume at, well, I'm trying to figure out if at that time, if we filled the 2 slots, would we stop, or presumably we would stop because we would have elected someone, but I'm looking for counsel. Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, again, I think it would, well, what I was trying to communicate when I said that we would vote for 2 is that when it's our turn to vote, that we can articulate 2 names of the 3, and I'm sure that our worthy person over there is able to put the necessary marks down so that we can figure out who prevails and therefore will be elected our co-chairs, as opposed to each individual and us going through them individually.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would agree with that, that this can be awkward enough without having to vote no on somebody. I would just as soon have the positive votes and move on.
Good counsel. Thank you. It seems the will of the body that we go through. I'll ask staff to simply call the roll and for folks to identify their 2 votes for co-chairs of the commission. And your pen didn't run out. Oh, it did. How's that for timing?
State government, that's fine. Good stewards of public office. Mr. Chair, I would just clarify it.
Senator Reiner.
Vote up to 2.
Up to 2. You are not required to vote for 2. You're not allowed to vote for 3.
Ready?
Yes.
Champion?
Champion Rosen.
Housley.
Champion Rosen.
Miller.
Champion Rosen.
Rosen.
Champion Rosen.
Reiner.
Champion and Rosen.
Sharon.
Champion Rosen.
Anderson.
Champion Rosen.
Atkins.
Champion Rosen.
Dabney.
Champion Rosen.
Hobby.
Atkins.
Kelly.
Atkins. Rosen.
Norton.
Atkins.
So Atkins 3, Champion 9, Rosen 10.
All right. With that, Senator Champion and Senator Rosen have been elected co-chairs of the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities. Thank you both. Look forward to your service and leadership.
First of all, let me say thank you to each person around the table for their vote of confidence. We just want to make sure that you know that as co-chair that we are going to work feverishly on behalf of the state of Minnesota, but also make sure that all of your voices around the table are being heard and represented. And I'll defer to my co-chair just in case she wants to say anything.
Thank you. I do appreciate your votes, and I know we will work diligently and make sure that we stay true to the intent of this commission. And if we could, Mr. Chair, if we could have Senator Reinhart talk about, this is his language, I'd like to have his thoughts on the language and why it's in the bill. I think that's important. I also want to thank Representative Dabney for taking the chair. And I know that you and also Representative Atkins have a bill up, so they might. There are some people that might have to leave during this meeting, but there is action going on. So if we could just turn it over to Senator Reinhart.
I think that would be appropriate. Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Senator Champion Rosen. And I'll be brief. I know we want to try and hear from the authority today, and we'll have other meetings to talk about this. I would encourage members, as Senator Sharon did, to pull the language and read through it. You'll see that in trying to put this together, the primary emphasis was not on the stadium issue at hand, though we certainly are going to want to delve into that and work with the authority on the major project that's coming forward, but on this bigger issue of how do we work with all of these public venues in the state of Minnesota. You know, we have several major venues, all of whom have had or will have public dollars. We got through the Vikings project, and all of us who were here last year know that, you know, halfway through that discussion, Target Center was knocking on the door. You know, we're part-time legislators. None of us are professional sports stadium architects. So the thought is, how do we manage these under one umbrella? How do we deal with them on an ongoing basis in a much more collaborative way? And I know with both co-chairs, we'll explore that further as the conversation continues. Thank you.
Thank you. And just so that the public knows and that the commission knows, what I would like to have happen with us being co-chairs is that we will rotate the gavel based on meetings. So the next meeting will be chaired by Senator Rosen. With that being said, I would like to invite the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority to come up and give us an update.
Thank you very much, Senators and Representatives. It's not on?
It doesn't. It just records for the tape.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Small enough room. First of all, I want to make note, being passed around is the legislative report that was required for us to submit to the State and House State Government Committee. This basically is an update that was done January 15th of the project. We also submitted it to both the majority and minority leadership, as well as all the members of the state government committees. Included in that, based on that date, is sort of the end of the year, which would have been about a six-month look back of the authority finances. It's really focused more on the authority and not so much on the stadium project itself, because obviously at that point, we didn't have any money that was project specific that we were dealing with. So this initial report really focuses on the actual authority budget, but I assume that this will be the kind of thing that your group will be looking at, you know, over the course of time. So I just wanted to make sure that you had a copy of that. It was required by statute, and we did submit our report on time. With that, I'll give a brief update of the project. Feel free to, you know, ask questions as we go along. I think everyone is pretty much aware of the fact that the funding that's coming, the combination of the city and state funding, is $498 million, and the Vikings are putting in $477 million. The Minnesota Sports Facility authority is essentially a reincarnation of the old Sports Facilities Commission, if you will. New board, 3 members appointed by the governor, 2 members appointed by the mayor, myself appointed as chair by the governor, and then the other members appointed by the governor include John Griffith, who's the vice president of Target Corporation for real estate, Dwayne Benson, who's a Minsky trustee and a former Republican legislator, Barbara Butts Williams, who's the dean of the School of Education for Capella University, and Bill McCarthy, who's the president of the Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation, are the 2 members appointed by the mayor. The legislation requires that a stadium design and construction group be put together to essentially make all the major decisions for the project. And essentially what it required was there be 2 members of the authority and 2 members of the team. And all major decisions related to construction as well as design of the stadium have to be signed off by this group. So essentially, it's a partnership between the team and the authority for all major decisions. And I mention that because a lot of times people will say to me, well, why doesn't the authority just do this? And I always remind people that essentially the legislation put together this requirement, which I think actually has worked really well. We figured out, you know, all these, in order to stay on schedule and on budget, we need to reach agreement. It was, I think, forethinking of the legislator to require us to come up with a process that ensures that we have joint decision-making and that we do things together, and that has really worked well. I think everybody realizes we're on the current site. It's a 33-acre site. Actually, the number of seats in the new stadium are going to be the same number of seats as in the old stadium, which, on the other hand, we are essentially increasing our square footage by about 50%. There's just going to be a lot more public space. There's going to be a lot more room to move around. It's going to have a big public plaza that connects to the neighborhoods, that really integrates it within the community, and I think will have a really positive effect on the neighborhood for that reason. One thing I always emphasize to people is, while the NFL, the football, the team, essentially contributes really 95% of the revenue that goes to operate the stadium, it comes from essentially 10 games a year. And essentially what it does is it allows us to have this multi-purpose stadium that can be used for essentially the other 350 days a year for us to do all the things that the current Metrodome has done. We have currently in the Metrodome over 300 baseball games are being played in that, high school, college, University of Minnesota, literally from 7 in the morning until 1 in the morning all spring. We've got games scheduled. That was a good example, I think, of really careful negotiation that took place between the team and the authority to make sure that the new design would accommodate baseball in the new stadium as well, because that's something the community has really come to rely on. We do the high school soccer and football championships, as well as a lot of youth games that are played in the fall. That's been a big piece of what we do, as well as marching band competitions and numerous community events. NCAA basketball, we actually we're putting in an application for the new facility to again host the NCAA championships. They actually have asked us to come out to meet with them next week to talk about our facility and what the amenities will be and what we have to offer the NCAA. As everyone knows, that's a huge economic boon to the state to be able to attract that kind of a tournament. I'm not sure people realize everything from the Hmong New Year, which takes place in the Metrodome, that also can be accommodated in the new stadium. That's an event that takes place over the course of almost a week. We do a lot of dirt events, which people don't really realize, but they're big family events. There are a lot of people come for this monster truck event, as well as there's a motocross event that's going to be there April 13th. It generates a lot of families and a lot of interest. The one thing we did listening tours around the state to talk about what do people want to make sure we either maintain or include in the new stadium. And everywhere we went, people talk about right now on the continuous concourses in the Metrodome, there are literally tens of thousands of people every spring that rollerblade all winter long on a nightly basis in the Metrodome. People were very clear that they want to include that as an option. They come, they literally pay a dollar. There's a group that runs it. And people make use, families, a lot of serious folks as well who want to just come out for good exercise and a lot of fun. And that's a big event that happens. I think everybody realizes in the early start of the schedule, Gopher, as well as numerous colleges and two-year universities, Minsky schools, all use the Metrodome for baseball games that are played. The first big decision that we had to reach was in September when we chose an architect to build the stadium. We chose HKS, and the primary reason we chose them was the fact that they really come in, take a look at the community, and they're able to look at the community, look at the area, and figure out what the right design is going to be and put together an iconic facility. They did the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and I point this out not because we would ever have anything that was close to that. It's obviously over the top and much larger than what we're going to be doing. But that's a very contemporary-looking facility. And at the same time that they were designing that, they were also designing Lucas Oil Field in Indianapolis. Those are two very different stadiums, very different looks, very different neighborhoods. They obviously came in and took a very different design approach to both of those. They're doing the same thing for us here in Minneapolis, and I guarantee our new stadium isn't going to look anything like either one of these. But it's going to be iconic, and it's going to be significant, and I think it's really going to fit the character of not only the city, but the state of Minnesota, and that's really what we wanted from them. When we chose HKS, a big piece of what we were looking for was someone who would really come in and be willing to work with us. They came in and they accepted targeted business goals. This was not required by the legislation, but they were willing to do it, and essentially we established a goal that said 19% of the architect's budget would go to women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses. The goal we set was 11% for women-owned businesses, 8% for minority-owned businesses. They have actually reached a targeted goal. They've reached the goal. They've got to 11.96% of the subcontracts are going to women-owned businesses, and 8.9% essentially are going to minority-owned businesses. This was not required. I do believe it's the first goal in a professional services contract like this that has been let that included these goals. Obviously, that was a big priority for the city of Minneapolis, as well as the legislature. I know it was a priority for the governor, and it became a high priority for the authority and the team. The good news is HKS has been working with us and is meeting those goals. These are just a list of the targeted business firms that have gotten contracts as part of this design project. I think it really is setting some new ground. It's been very significant. We've hired Mortenson Construction, along partnered with Thor Construction for the construction piece of the project. I think everyone knows that they have done both Target Field as well as TCF Stadium. What you may not know is, while this is a local firm, it also really is probably, I mean, clearly it was the most qualified firm. They've done over 100 sports and entertainment venues all across the country in terms of other projects that they've done. It just also so happened they were a Minnesota-based firm, which we obviously thought was a point in their favor as we are looking constantly at trying to keep the jobs in Minnesota. That is our goal. We had, I'll just mention some of the other projects, Coors Field that they built in Denver, as well as the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis, Memphis, Tennessee. A lot of people just aren't familiar with the work that Norton's have done in other areas. The workforce projections, again, this is what it's all about. I mean, clearly the targeted numbers of workers as well as jobs that are going to be springing from this project was a big part of what people were trying to accomplish. This is just meant to give you a sense of, you know, 5,616 carpenters will be employed over the course of this project. We are now in the process of breaking this all down on really a monthly basis so we can start doing the recruitment and the training for workers to fill all these jobs. The other thing I want to mention to you is we really are focused on Minnesota workers. While we've got some very aggressive women and minority targeted goals that we'll talk about in a minute, in the end, we are much more interested in making sure that they are all Minnesota employees. We don't want to bring in, whether it's women and minority folks or any other targeted folks, we aren't looking at bringing people in from outside the state. We're looking at Minnesota workers. So that adds a certain challenge to meeting these goals. But it also means that no matter what, we will try to meet those goals, but in the end, it's going to be about Minnesota workers. We're not going to bring in a bunch of people from outside of the state. The equity plan that we put together was based, it addressed the requirements of your legislation. We adopted the City of Minneapolis goals for workforce and targeted businesses, which was required by your legislation. We've got incredibly aggressive goals that we are going to be working to meet. 32% of the workforce must be minorities, 6% must be business, must be women. We have a targeted business goal of 20%, which will be 11% minorities, 11% women, 9% minorities. What we've added to that, however, is all of them must be Minnesota businesses. So again, we're not looking to bring in a bunch of businesses, targeted businesses, from outside of the state. We're looking at Minnesota businesses, which I think is really important. We were able to get loaned executives from the Met Council who came in and helped us develop this equity plan. They are going to be going back to the Met Council, doing their normal jobs now that the equity plan has been developed. And we will be hiring then a full-time person on the project that the team and the authority will be working with to implement this equity plan that we've put in place. We will be doing an RFP within the next few weeks that will go out asking for an employment assistance firm, which also was identified in your legislation, that will work to conduct the training in order to train folks to fill these jobs. Obviously, a lot of minority and women targeted workforce folks are available, but frankly, especially in a lot of the specialty firms, there just are not the people that are going to give us the numbers that will meet those goals. So we are going to have an aggressive outreach, recruitment, and training program in order to meet these goals. Luckily, Mortenson Construction has a long history of working with employment firms as well as community folks and doing outreach and recruitment to fill the workforce. So they obviously are working closely with us to put this plan in place. We're also, again, not required by the legislation, but something that we certainly heard about and have responded to is to make sure that the workforce we bring in include a great deal of outreach and work together with the veteran community. We hope that we will be able to track, we plan to track those numbers so we can tell you the number of veterans who are being hired on this project and the number who are in the workforce as well as the targeted businesses that also happen to be veteran-owned businesses. We are going to have what's called a Stadium Equity Oversight Committee is going to be put in place, and this will be a public forum for people to come. There will be stakeholders that will have seats on this committee, and essentially what will happen on a periodic basis as the project gets underway, The Mortenson Construction, along with all their subcontractors, will essentially come and report on where they're at in meeting these targeted goals. The idea is that it's not going to be a big shaming and blaming session. It's going to be about trying to get the job done. And if they're short on meeting goals in certain areas, we're going to have labor folks there. We're going to have the training organization there. We're going to have community stakeholders there. We're going to figure out how to get it done. So it's going to be a collaborative working group, but it also will provide some transparency and public oversight so people can keep track of where things are at. The schedule. Our project, first of all, I assure you, is on track and will be built on time and on budget. As I mentioned, in April, we'll have the request for proposal for the employment and training organization to be hired. In late April, early May, we will have the schematic design done for the stadium. That will be what comes out that will show everyone what the stadium is actually going to look like, how it sits on the site, what the public spaces are, how it connects to the neighborhood, and what the not only building image is on the outside, but also what it's going to look like on the inside. This will make it a lot more tangible. It will make it a lot more...
We have one question.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Michelle, can you give us a little bit of tidbit on what it's going to look like? Come on. Or do we have to wait till
Ms.
the end?
Ms. Kellen-Helga?
Well, I mean, it really is at this point, it's a moving target. Essentially, what we did is we had a lot of different options that our architects were looking at. Mm-hmm. And now what we're doing is going through a process with our construction firm to price all those different pieces to see what we can afford within our budget. Everyone knows there's no more public money. The Vikings have already put in a substantial contribution, so we're working within that budget. So it really is, at this point, kind of a moving target. The one thing I will tell you is there's going to be a lot of glass and light, and it's going to be, whereas the Metrodome sort of sits as this, you know, big kind of blimp, and it's kind of an island. There's all those barriers and fences around it. This is going to have plaza that literally goes around. There's not going to be, they talk about, no back door. There's going to be paths that lead to the neighborhoods. There's going to be connections to the light rail. There's actually a major development that's being talked about that might come in downtown Minneapolis to sit right in front that would connect the stadium by skyway to the downtown. A lot of people have said to me, why is this going to be any different? The Metrodome has never had any economic impact on that city. There's been no development around it. How is this going to be different? And what I talk about is the fact that the whole thing is being designed in a different way. To have the plaza like Target Field that opens, that draws the community in, to have the trails and the walking paths. But also, more importantly, a big part of this, if you think about it, light rail was there, and people say, well, sure, it was there 7 years, nothing happened. Well, the big difference is 7 years ago, if you remember, when light rail started, the Twins were just leaving to go to their new location. No one knew what was going to be happening on this site, and no business was going to want to make a major investment around that stadium area until they knew, was this going to be some white elephant that sat empty? Why would they ever want to make an investment? Now with Central Corridor coming online in 2014 and a definitive decision made by the state and the city and the team about not only are we staying, but here it is. And I think with this new design coming out in a couple of weeks, it is, I mean, the interest in this area has already just exploded. And I believe the economic impact of this area is going to be huge, and I think it's going to make a big difference. But we are being very intentional about the differences and what our job is. It's about the workforce. It's about the economic impact to the state. As everyone knows, we essentially will be breaking ground in October of 2013 of this year. And the Vikings will play two seasons at TCF Bank, and then we'll be opening in July of 2016. Great. So that's an update. I assume that we'll have more of these along the way as the project develops. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be
Any questions? Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Michelle, thank you. You know, to come back to the opening comments, has the authority even had, you've got a full plate, but I'm curious if the authority has had the chance to describe sort of the bigger vision of where we go from here with professional sports venues, or have you been sort of forced to remain just on this project?
I mean, at this point, what we've done is we've just been clear, as we've been asked, that we are open to the conversation if that's what the legislature decides should be done. You know, we've been clear the way the legislation is written. I think it allows, the current legislation allows for other groups to come to us,
right.
But it's very unclear what the structure might be.
Right.
So hopefully, as you make any decisions, you would clarify what it is exactly you're looking at. We would
put,
you know, we'd be open to whatever the legislature decides.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, you certainly have a big project before you, but as this goes on, you know, there are just members, there's a reason it's the Minnesota Sports Facilities Plural Authority, and that it's not the Vikings Authority or the People Stadium Authority, that it was meant to be more than just the one project. And I commented to Senator Miller as I was rebriefing myself on the legislation, it kind of got watered down, at least this portion, as we went through. And I know, Michelle, you remember that there was some pretty specific language about other venues being able to opt in as time goes along. So it's something I think we maybe need to revisit in order to help you as you have that conversation down the road.
Well, we will definitely revisit that as well. Senator Miller.
Thank
and
you,
then
Ms.
I will go to you, Mr. Senator Dabney.
Did you have a question?
Representative Dabney, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Kelm-Helgen. Thank you so much for the presentation and the update. Much appreciated. You talked about a lot of the different events that are going to be held at the People's Stadium, and all very exciting. I noticed on one of your earlier slides there was a reference to the Super Bowl. And I think this is an event that that we all hope that we'll be able to get back in Minnesota after the new stadium is built. And the number of seats said 65,000, but could be expanded to, I believe it said 73,000. Can you explain that a little bit,
sure.
How that works? Is it a permanent expansion or temporary, and who would pay for that?
Yeah. Testify.
It's temporary expansion, but it's being done in a very intentional way. So essentially what you would do, and this is kind of typical in a lot of domes, you would have an area of the stadium that would allow for an additional seating area to be put in there. Could be a temporary basis. It could also be done on a permanent basis. If we were to open and see that, you know, the games are full and there's more interest in tickets, you could add those seats on a permanent basis as well. The cost would be borne by the authority, but it would probably be looked at from revenue that would be gotten, that would come in from the Super Bowl. If you can imagine, you know, there's obviously some revenue that comes with that. There has been already an application for the Super Bowl, the intention that we would like to host. The team obviously is, the Vikings are obviously very much pushing that and moving on that and on the lead on that, but along with the authority, it's being looked at. So maybe 2017, maybe 2018, but that's the intention.
Sorry.
There is a group looking at a lot of different events. I mean, there's a lot of big events that we haven't been able to host that we probably could be in line for.
A follow-up, Senator Miller?
Nope, I'm good. Okay. Thank you.
One of the things that I know about the Super Bowl is that there can be no one standing, so everyone has to have a seat. So that's why that expansion is very important.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I'd like to add is hopefully we'll see the Minnesota Vikings in the Super Bowl, maybe even before 2017 or 2018.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one comment and then a question or two for the testifier. Senator Reinert, as you know, to your comments about this being a larger than just the Vikings Stadium, Representative Mahoney and I in this body, and Senator, is it her?
Yes.
Thank you. And Senator Hayden in your body have a bill to require the coordination of the governance of the Excel Center here in St. Paul and the Target Center in Minneapolis. If I remember correctly, January 1 of 2015, but with a report by the two cities February 1 of 2014 with a number of questions stipulated in the legislation, but one of them is how would you come in under the umbrella of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority? So hopefully those that vision that you and I share of some leadership that's been missing around sports venues in the state the last 10 years, maybe 20 years, and greater coordination, and hopefully then less public subsidy, can be played out through that. And I assume that they will be consulting this Kelm Helgen and the authority.
Senator Ryan?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I think it would be helpful for us at some point to pull out the old language and talk about what are the venues and how might they come in, because there was a vision for that, and I think it was, to use one of the terrible adages, too big a bite of the apple last session as we were trying to do a lot of other work. But as we progress, that is a conversation to have, because the original intent, the original vision was five different venues that could opt in, but then also some dedicating of revenue streams so that these facilities could be co-managed, improved as necessary, or rebuilt as necessary without consuming, almost literally an entire legislative session on one project, knowing that as soon as it's done, we've got another one waiting for us.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Ms. Kelm Helgen, you presented the funding model and the timeline that flows with that. The piece that, unless you touched on it when I was out of the room, we all know that the funding model isn't working as projected. What is the authority's decision-making process around the fallback revenues that are in the bill or coming back for different revenues, and what is the trigger point as to when the authority decides whether to let the bonds or not, and the public's confidence that if you let the bonds, that the revenues will actually be there to support them independent of the state's general fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, the way the program has been put together, it essentially is a decision of MMB as to when and how they let the bonds. We have been talking with MMB about how revenues flow and when we're going to need cash into the project. What they've told us at this point is they're looking at a bond sale. Again, I don't want to speak for them, so I'm a little, because we are not the ones, we don't do the bond sale. It's being done by the state.
And perhaps I can interject here.
Senator.
One of the things that I think would be appropriate is for us to have that future discussion about that exactly. And I would hate to put our testifier in the position to start articulating what they're thinking about, alternative funding sources, because that's something that we're going to have to wrestle with in real time. Not to put you off, but I'm not sure if the testifier feels really comfortable talking about that at this time.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney?
I think we can do both and.
Okay.
I guess I would ask the testifier to Ms. Kelm Helgen to continue and update the commission as to where things are at from the authority's perspective. Can't ask you to speak for MMB, as you've asked not to. But then also I think this body should schedule a second meeting quickly, or in the near term.
Yes.
And I would urge that be, if not the dominant agenda item, certainly a significant agenda item, because I think there's a great deal of concern in the community, regardless of how you feel about the stadium, a great deal of concern in the community about how are we going to do this since it's not working the way it was envisioned.
Representative Dabney, I think you're absolutely right. That's something that we are definitely going to talk about in real time, and that's something that I'll definitely get with the co-chair about so we can schedule that, so that that will be something that this commission will wrestle with. Ms. Kelm Helgen, if you feel comfortable, to what point?
Yeah, just what I can tell you is the way the legislation was written, which I think had a lot of foresight anticipating, that it could take a little while for revenues to come up to the point where they're flowing the way, if implementation were to be slow. the legislation kind of anticipated that perhaps, because essentially what they've done is they've said essentially the first $50 million is money that is put in by the team. So right now there is money in the project that's coming from the team. So the good news is the money from that will come from the state eventually isn't needed right now as we're proceeding. And because we are, just to be clear, I mean, we are spending money. We're obviously doing designs. We've hired a construction firm. We've got environmental impact statements going. There's traffic work being done. There's a lot of work going on the project. So we're in, we're going. We've all agreed that we're holding hands and moving ahead. So the project is definitely moving. But right now, we're in a position where we've got money in the project. Right now, it's coming from the team. And I think there is some time as we look at things to build up. And you know, we obviously are willing and wanting to be helpful in any way we can as things progress. So.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon.
This is to follow up, though. I am very interested in what you're talking about now. And with Chair's permission, I really would like to see how the money flows, talking about having expenditures, seeing what those expenditures are and which of the three revenue streams that money is coming from, or how money is drawn from each of the sources of revenue to pay off bonds, just to sort of have that laid out to know how those obligations are being met over time. That would be helpful to me to understand that and to see that you are the new group, the citizens group that's overseeing the new stadium as well as the old Metrodome and the movement from the old Metrodome into the new system. That's part of your responsibility as well, correct?
Yes.
And so it would be, and I see that you've given us some materials that talk about the current operating expenditures and revenues for the Metrodome. Mm-hmm. But I don't have numbers, I don't think, to see what's happening with the new sports facility. So that would be really helpful, I think, if we could track that along with the overall discussion of the decisions that you're making.
Ms. Kim Helge, is that okay? Do you think you can give us that information in soon? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kim Helge, since the price tag for the stadium was developed, what, a year ago, or just coming out of a recession, construction was slow. And now the economy is picking up, construction is picking up, and your guaranteed price is going to be in the fall of this year. Are you seeing any indication that the price of materials is going up faster than you had anticipated, and you may have to cut back any of the frills, so to speak, to stay under budget, as you mentioned in your presentation?
Ms. Kim Helge.
Right. You know, at this point, the pricing that's going on by the construction firm seems to be pretty much what was anticipated. I don't know that anyone ever, as our architects and the construction firm are putting things together, they're assuming that the economy is going to get better, the market's going to pick up, and things won't be discounted perhaps as much as they have been. That being said, everything that's being designed is being looked at with the view that we're living within the budget. So I think everyone assumes that there's no more money in this project. So anything we do will have to be done within that budget. And at this point, I think, you know, it's always, there always are many things you could think of that you would like to do that would be nice to include that we probably can't include as we get closer. So whether they're, you know, I don't know. It's a balance. The one thing I do know that we've heard when we did our listening tour, and we are, again, we were in Rochester, Duluth, suburban areas, and we really tried to get out and talk with folks, and we're going to be doing more of that. But what people talked about was, you know, the public amenities. If anyone's been in the Metrodome, those hallways, I mean, it really is kind of a safety issue as you get the crush of people in there. You've got to spread that out. You've got to have the public. I mean, all the restroom space, all those kind of things are so underdeveloped in the Metrodome, and those are the kind of things that no matter what are going to be addressed in the traffic circulation and that kind of thing. So, you know, beyond that, what are some other things we can include? It's going to be hard to tell. But so far, it looks like the budget that we're working with is manageable. So we're working hard. But we realize we've got to stay within the budget, and that's what it is. So we get that.
Representative Anderson, do you have a follow-up, or is that okay? Okay, Senator Sharon?
In addition to making certain that this facility is great for the Vikings, because 355 days of the year that's spent for other public purposes, and it's part of why I think the public has a legitimate role in helping to participate in the payment for the Viking Stadium, I think it's important from my perspective as a legislator to make certain that as things move forward and the design is created, that it has that in mind, that it's not just a Vikings stadium, but it's also a facility that will be utilized for multiple purposes, as you've given us some examples. And I think I've read in the newspaper that there is a little bit of a struggle around design, because sometimes there might be conflicting needs for how a facility would be designed in order to accomplish various, you know, activities within the facility. I think that's correct, and I understood that around whether or not it would be used for baseball, or not baseball, but there was another utilization that you were talking about. It might have been baseball.
It was baseball.
Along with the Viking Stadium. I read that you've come to a negotiated agreement about that, but I certainly would like to be included in what the issues are around meeting the needs of the Viking Stadium, but also remembering and having a strong voice in reminding in the design and the architectural design that the public's other uses are important as well, including public restrooms.
Ms. Kim Haldon?
We're very much aware of that. The legislation, again, I think was crafted in a really good way because it's very specific in saying that events and activities that have long been part of the Metrodome must be accommodated in the new stadium. That, to us, I think, was a very good directive because it did make clear that we had to have a responsibility to make sure that we could accommodate that. The baseball, though, was a good example. This stadium design committee that was put together that forces us to work together to negotiate these things and come to a common agreement, the process worked, and we were able to have a design solution that took care of the baseball coaches. We're all happy with the solution, as well as the team was happy with their, you know, NFL experience and the way that was accommodated and protected. So it's always a balancing act.
Just
one follow-up. I'm hoping that the architect has... or whomever the design people are, have some suggestions as well for what might be done. We know what we've done in the past. For example, the roller skating, roller blading around the arena. Something that is a corridor to move people safely can also be a place for people to roller skate, can also be a running track, can also be multiple purpose use for the public. And that's just one of maybe many ideas like that that we aren't already doing that might be possible, that could be offered to us creatively from a person who's designing this. So I'm hoping they'll be called upon to not just be reacting to what we tell them to do, but bringing some ideas to us about how to expand the capacity of our utilization of this investment 355 days a year.
That's a really good point and something we can come back and talk about more specifically. I will say in the listening tours we did as we went out to hear from the community what they were interested in and what they wanted to make sure, we took our architects along and they were there listening and engaged in talking with folks as they talked about ideas. And a lot of the things that were talked about, they are incorporating into this, but we could have a presentation that was a little bit more specific about things that we're doing to address those other needs. Some of those needs with the much larger expanded plaza and outdoor space, I think there's a lot of ideas for how to have many different activities out there as well, or get activities that need some of that outdoor space, get events that need some of that outdoor space that now could be accommodated within the facility.
Any other questions for Ms. Kelmhelder? Anyone else? If nothing else, thank you so very much. We sincerely appreciated the update. We should be nearing, unless there's something else the commission would like to talk about, we should be nearing the conclusion of our first meeting, but I'll turn to the co-chair who will sort of talk about our next meeting.
Okay, thank you. We have not set a time certain on the next meeting. I think Representative Dabney's comments about charitable gaming issue are very valid and relevant and need to be addressed fairly soon. But at that same meeting, I think it would be important to bring in the Vikings, too, and be able to talk to them. It'd be nice also when the design does get or close to being unveiled, we could maybe have a sneak preview. Mm-hmm. Just putting it out there. And so if it's okay, we really haven't set a time certain, but we could throw out a couple dates and see what you would work for everybody. Senator Sharon.
I was going to bring this up and earlier and I forgot about it, but I wondered if we wanted to schedule, it would be helpful to me to have sort of a date, a regular meeting schedule, if we knew what that was. You can cancel them if there's not the business, but from my schedule, it's really helpful if we were going to say every Friday morning or every other Friday morning. Once I don't know what the thought is about the amount of time we need to meet in order to do our work, but if we could agree to something that, you know, both the House and the Senate could feel pretty committed to, an hour meeting every other Friday or something for a while, to get a sense of something, that would really be helpful to me. Mm-hmm. In scheduling.
Mm-hmm. We are missing four members. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are missing four members, but and there are some rural folks here that come in on Monday mornings, so that's tough, I would assume.
So Representative Anderson. So perhaps what we could do with that in mind is try to land upon, you know, consistent days, but perhaps I throw out there that we can do it by way of email right now to sort of land upon something and then notify the public once we land upon a, on a date and time that can be consistent and useful for all around the table. Mm-hmm. Will that be okay, Senator?
Yeah, Smith? I'm just curious to know, do others think we should come up with a consistent time for a regular meeting?
How does Friday morning work?
Is that helpful to anybody but me?
Does Friday morning work?
I like the chair's suggestion. We send an email out and with members missing, that way we can make sure we pick a date that works best for everybody.
But you like the consistency idea.
I'm all about consistency most of the time.
So we'll make sure that we
once in a while.
So we'll make sure that that email gets around and that we get buy-in from everyone and land upon a date and time that works for everyone. Anything else? And just want to remind the commission, if you have any specific topics that you'd like for us to cover, you know, make sure that you send those ideas to us as well, and we want to deal with that expeditiously. Anything else? If nothing else, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.